nanohub.org. You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
Okay, so the last couple of lectures, we have been talking about this general area of what's called correlated states and trying to give you a feeling for how you think about problems where the one particle picture, the one electron picture is not quite adequate, in the sense that everything we have done in this course, till the last few lectures, was based on this one electron picture, and that gives you a fairly general way of handling a very wide class of transport problems. You have a H that describes your system, that's this one electron Hamiltonian, and you have the connection to the surroundings. And of course, the most important thing that's very hard to include in any theory of transport is this electron-electron interactions. I mean, that's the one thing that you really don't quite know how to do. Everything you do is some kind of an approximation. Okay? And the usual way of doing it is what you'd call mean field theory. And that's this U here, which we haven't talked a whole lot about. What's that U? Well, it's this potential that one electron feels due to all the other electrons. The simplest approximation to that, what you'd get out of Poisson equation. You actually need some corrections to that. And a lot of the work that goes on in this field often has to do with what's the best approximation to U? What's the best way to choose your U so that it would describe the real world better? Okay. But what I wanted to give you a feeling for is, in this last few lectures, is how you think in the multi-electron picture, which is an exact way of thinking of interacting systems. That is, whenever you have an interacting system, the thing is, if you have two electrons which are strongly interacting, then you see often, then the right way to think about it, the one that has no approximations, is you think of the whole two-electron thing as one big system, which has certain energy levels. And the simplest example of that would be that if you had just one atom or a quantum dot with two levels, A and A bar, then the various allowed states of the multi-electron system would be 0, A, A bar, and A, A bar. Namely, no electrons, one electron, or both filled. That would be the simplest example to go through. I guess the even simpler one would be if you had just one level. Then the two states would be 0 and A. That's it. That would be the simplest case. This would be the next simpler one. And the one that's like a little harder, but has a lot of physics in it, that's what we have been trying to go through in the last two lectures. And that's the one that gives rise to singlet and triplet states. And what's that example? Well, that's an example where you have like two atoms or like a molecule. And the simplest natural example of that would be a hydrogen molecule. Like you have one hydrogen atom with a 1s level, and you could have an upspin or a downspin. And another 1s level, upspin or a downspin. If it's identical, then epsilon 1 is equal to epsilon 2. And I think the example we went through, we probably assumed those two to be equal. But in general, they don't need to be equal. Those two could have been different. And here, you can again think of all the various multi-electron states, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And as I said, the one-electron case, that's relatively easy. That's just like the usual one-electron theory. You got four states, and you can write down a Hamiltonian here. What's a little more tricky is to consider the two-electron states. So they've got four levels, two electrons. There's kind of six basis functions. Six states in terms of which you can describe the situation. And that's what we went through last day. Okay? Now, once you have a Hamiltonian, this is like the H. This would be the one particle part of it. This would be the two particle part of it. There's a three particle and a four particle that you could all fill up. But once you have the H then, how do you calculate real things of interest? Well, if it's an equilibrium problem you're trying to do, then there's a general way. And that is, exponential minus h minus mu n over kT. That's this density matrix. And this z is a constant, which you have to determine such that the sum of the diagonal elements of rho are all add up to 1. So you choose z in such a way that trace of rho is 1. So this would be the general version of this basic law of equilibrium statistical mechanics, where this h is a matrix, and you have to find the exponential of that matrix. Now, as I mentioned before, of course, one way to think of it in simpler terms is to say, think of a basis in which h is diagonal. In which case, in that basis, this is also diagonal, and what it tells you is the probability of finding the electron in a particular state, eigenstate, etc. So if you're doing equilibrium problems then, and you know, lots of problems that people work on in different contexts are often equilibrium problems. And then I'd say this would be the starting point. I mean, the first thing is, of course, you have to write down your h or some approximation to it which you believe includes all the interactions appropriately. And then this is what you try to evaluate with two various degrees of approximation. Because usually, of course, you're not doing a small problem like this where you can write out the entire matrix on a blackboard. More often, it's a huge thing that you can't quite write it out, and instead you have to make various approximations and get. But the starting point then would be something like this. Now, what I wanted to talk about today is a little bit about how you'd go beyond this and try to do non-equilibrium problem. So, for example, transport problem, and give you a feeling for how you approach such a problem and the kind of interesting things that could come out of it that you may not see if you're doing a typical one electron calculation, right? Because most of the time, as I said, what people use is this method. And the two reasons why people don't usually work in the multi-electron picture. One is just that the Hamiltonian gets very big, and so it gets out of hand. But the other one is that in this picture, as yet, there is no good way to include broadening. So, yeah.
Something I want to clear that since in the channel we had experimented by h by u, now probably it's up to us that what terms we include in h and what part we include in u. For example, I mean, if we have electron-electron interaction, we can include it in u, I guess. But in that what determines that, okay, this part is my h and this part I'll probably keep it in u, because I mean, I guess only the h part will go into that.
So, one thing to keep, I need to be clear about the notation here a little bit. Yes, good question. And that is, what I wrote here, that's a one-electron Hamiltonian. What I wrote here is the multi-electron Hamiltonian. So, strictly speaking, I really should have used two different symbols. You see, I should put a bar or something on top here to denote that this is a whole different thing. In the sense that if you have n one electron state, that one is n by n. This one is 2 to the power n by 2 to the power n. You see, it's a whole different matrix. And so, those are two different h's, right? And whenever you're using this law, this basic law of equilibrium statement, it is really in that multi-electron picture. It's not in that picture, right? One thing I showed you is that if you start from here and apply it to a simple thing like this, where you have one level like this, and you find the average occupation, you'd get the Fermi function. And of course, if you have non-interacting electrons, then if you have 100 of them, you could say all 100 are independent. And so for each one, you have a Fermi function, and you can go on from there. If it's an interacting system, then with some approximations under some conditions, what you can show is you can still use a Fermi function provided you calculate a self-consistent potential like this, etc. Now, within the one electron picture, the u is the part that depends on electron density. So there is some arbitrariness in there as to what you call h and what you call u. That is, you might say that, well, the h is what you'd have if there were no electrons in your system. And then u is whatever it is due to the electrons. Except that that's usually not most convenient. The way you usually do it is h is what you'd have if you have n electrons in your system, where n is the number that it takes to keep the system neutral, because that's the status it's usually in, right? Usually things are charge neutral. So H usually is whatever you'd have in the presence of n electrons. And then if you add a few electrons or take them out, then it's up to you to correct it appropriately. But that's a matter of bookkeeping here, how you're going to do that. Okay, so what I wanted to give you a feeling for today is a little more about this, how you do transport problems. And one good, let me just remind you that if you have, let's say, just one level, and you put a voltage across this, so you have mu 1 and mu 2, and you look at current versus voltage, what you get is something like this. As you push this up, at some point you cross that level, and that's when the current steps up. And what is the magnitude of this current? Well, if the rate at which it comes in and out is gamma 1 and gamma 2, then the current is Q over H bar gamma 1 gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2. This is the standard one electron result you'd get from relatively simple arguments. Now, how would you get this out of a multi-electron picture? With a multi-electron picture, you'd argue that, well, let's say I have this level A. So you could either have this level be empty or it could be filled. That's the A level, and this is the empty state. So you have one electron in there or no electrons in there. And what happens is, every time an electron comes in from here, takes this system and takes it from here and pushes it up there. And every time an electron goes out, you come down. And so the process of conduction involves taking the system, taking it from here up there, and bringing it down. That's how you think of transport in the multi-electron picture. And equilibrium, of course, means that no current flows, in which case that it would... These would all cancel out. Now, the way you'd find the current here is the rate at which you are going up or the rate at which you are going down. At steady state, the two are balanced. But one of them, if you look at one of them, it will tell you what is the current. So, for example, you say that at steady state, let's say the occupation of this is P0 and the occupation of that is P1. And the rate at which you are going up is proportional to gamma times the number of electrons that are available in the contact having the right energy. Because this has an energy of 0, this has an energy of epsilon. So in order to come in, you need to have an electron with an energy epsilon. And the probability that you'll have one coming in, one available, is the Fermi function at epsilon. So you have these two reservoirs. So you could write, for the rate of going up, you could write gamma 1 F1 plus gamma 2 F2. Now remember, when I'm writing F1, what I really mean is the Fermi function in contact 1 at energy epsilon. Right? So strictly speaking, I should have put an epsilon here. Just not to clutter it up, I'm not writing that. So it's this. Now, can you help me with what's the rate at which it comes down? So in this case, in order to come down, of course, you need to find an empty spot to put the electron out. So instead of F1, it will now be 1 minus F1. Instead of F2, it will be 1 minus F2. So that's what I'll write as gamma 1 F1 bar plus gamma 2 F2 bar. Now, at equilibrium, what would have happened is, equilibrium means F1 and F2 are basically the same. It's all the same Fermi function. It's all the same chemical potential. So if it were equilibrium, then this would be just be gamma F, this rate. This would just be gamma F bar. And in general, you could then write the ratio of P0 to P1 as, can you help me? Or P1 to P0. Either one is fine. Can you help me with what's P1 to P0 ratio? It's like P0 times this is equal to P1 times that, steady state. Rate at which you go up, same rate at which you come down. So it will be P0 times, so I suppose I should write gamma 1 F1 plus gamma 2 F2 over and the point I wanted to make is at equilibrium this would have been simply gamma F, you know, those two would have been equal, so it would be just gamma 1 plus gamma 2 times F and then gamma F bar, so it would just be F over F bar. So at equilibrium the ratio would just come out as, and this is something we have gone through before, that you can write F over F bar simply as e to the power minus epsilon minus mu over kt. And of course, as you have discussed, the basic law of equilibrium is that the ratio of P1 to P0 should be that factor. That's the basic law of equilibrium that I stated. And the point I was trying to make is, if you hadn't heard of the basic law of equilibrium and simply said that, well, it's an equilibrium with this reservoir having some F, you'd have come to the same conclusion from a dynamical argument, that the rate at which you are going up is proportional to F, rate at which you are coming down is proportional to F bar, and F to F bar ratio is that, so it maintains equilibrium. Okay. Now, of course, when you are non-equilibrium, that means F1 is not equal to F2. And now, of course, the ratio has to be calculated straight from here. Now, one way to find then this value, what is the maximum current that flows? Well, the maximum current is obtained when you have biased it in such a way that at this energy, F1 happens to be 1 and F2 happens to be 0. So, electrons keep coming in and going out. So, what that means is, as far as going up is concerned, it is entirely due to 1, because F1 is 1. So you just write a gamma 1 here. That's the rate at which you go up. And the rate at which you come down, what will it be? Right. Because F1 is 1, so F1 bar is 0. So as far as the coming down is concerned, the only term that contributes is gamma 2. So then you have a relatively simple picture. It's like, every time the state is empty, an electron comes in from 1, the rate at which it comes in is gamma 1. And then every time it's full, it goes out, but then when it goes out into 2. So that's it. And so the ratio of P1 to P0 then will be gamma 1 to gamma 2. Now what's the current? Well, either this rate or that rate, those are equal. But any one of them will tell you the rate at which current flows. So you could take, say, Q times gamma 1 over H bar. You know, gamma 1 over H bar is the rate at which it comes in times P0. And, of course, I'm multiplying by Q if you want the charge current, because every time an electron goes through, it carries that much charge. Anyway, so that would be the answer. Now, any ideas on how I get P0? Right. You make use of the fact that the sum of the two is equal to 1. That's the thing. Right? Because, so the way I'd say it is, let's say P0 is equal to 1, then P1 would be equal to, so let me, so let's say P0 is equal to 1, then P1 would be equal to gamma 1 over gamma 2. But then the 2 must add up to 1. So what I have to do is obviously divide each one by 1 over 1 plus gamma 1 over gamma 2. So whatever I had, if I take the sum and divide both, then overall I can ensure that the sum will be 1. Okay, so this is how I'd figure out P0. And when you put that in there, you'll get our old answer. So nothing new. I'm just showing you how in the multi-electron picture, you get back the standard answer. Because if now instead of P0, I put 1 over 1 plus gamma 1 over gamma 2, and if I have done things right, this should be our old answer. Okay? But this is how the multi-electron picture would work. It's a very different picture. Now, for doing this one level problem, of course, there's no good reason to be doing, making it, going into this picture at all. But the one important example where you can see the utility of this picture is, if you had a problem where, you know, it's not just one level, but you got two levels, A and A bar. Now the question is, what do you expect for the current versus voltage? And the thing is, what you see is two steps, like this. And when you have put enough voltage across it, then the current you get is twice what you'd get out of one level. That's what you kind of expect. You got two levels, and when you put enough voltage, it's actually just 2q over h bar, gamma 1, gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma. That's what it will eventually be when you got put in enough voltage. Question is, what is it here? What is this step about? When does that come in? Now, if you did a mean field theory or this self-consistent field theory, like if you are doing NEGF and you actually calculated some self-consistent potential that you have adjusted properly, then what you'd have got is a curve that would have looked something like this. You see? Of course, the exact details of this will depend on exactly how you chose your mean field, how you're calculating the U, what choice you're making. But it would usually tend to go smoothly over. It wouldn't quite show you the steps. And the reason is, the way you think about it is, as electrons come in, these levels get filled, and as they get filled up, they kind of float up on you. And because they are floating up, you have to put more and more voltage to actually go through it. That's kind of what happens. Okay. But the fact that it sort of floats up suddenly at one point and then again at another, that won't come out usually of this standard mean field picture. It will come out, though, if you put in something called self-interaction correction. That is, you could argue something like this. That you see, when an electron comes in here, usually the way you're thinking is, because you have an electron there, there's a certain potential and everything is floating up somewhat. But the right way to think, the more correct way to think here is, that when you put an electron into the A level, what happens is the A bar level floats way up here. But the A level stays right where it is, doesn't float up. Why? Because the argument is that no electron feels anything due to itself. That's all. It feels only the potential due to the other electrons. So the A bar level floats up because there's an electron in there. But the A level just stays where it is. Anyway, so the bottom line is, you start conducting through the A level immediately, but that's only one level, but you're not getting it through the other one. Now, to get it to float, to get the current to flow through the other one, you have to put an amount of some extra voltage, so you raise this way up here, so that you can now actually conduct through this. And that's when you'll get the second one. That's one way of understanding why you get two steps. What it misses, though, is that based on this point of view, you'd have thought that this step should exactly be at half that value. Why? Because, you know, here you got two levels to go through, here you had only one level to go through. So you'd have thought that this should be exactly halfway. But the correct answer, and people have done experiments on quantum dots which show this anyway, is that it's actually not halfway. It's, in fact, if gamma 1 is equal to gamma 2, it's about 2/3 of the way. So the correct expression for this one is actually Q over h bar, you see, so So the maximum one, let me just write it here. So the expression for this one is so this one is 2 gamma 1 gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2, whereas this one is 2 gamma 1 gamma 2 over there's a 2 here, but none there. So if gamma 1 were equal to gamma 2, so let's say we put both equal to 1, then you'll notice this factor would come to 2. If I just put gamma 1 equals to gamma 2 equals to 1. Now, do I get 2 or do I get 1? 1, thank you. So I get 1. And what do I get here? If I put gamma 1 and gamma 2 both equal to 1? 2/3. So that's the basic result, that if both psi contacts are equivalent, equal, then this is not half of that, rather it is 2/3 of that. And this is the one point that I often try to make, that, you know, people who say, well, you know, we have got a very nice, clever mean field U, which works nicely and captures all the physics. And I say, well, but can you get this 2/3 thing? Because most of the usual mean field pictures will always give you half. It doesn't matter how clever you choose it, because how cleverly we choose it will determine where these steps occur, whether they occur here or a little bit later, a little bit earlier, that's what it will do. But what it won't do is give you this 2/3 thing, see? And I always make the point that this 2/3 thing, though, is not nothing mysterious. You can actually, if you take this multi-electron picture, you'd get it very quickly. You could see it very easily why. And yet it's very hard to get it out of a simple mean field picture. So the way I do this thing in the multi-electron picture would be something like this. In the multi-electron picture, remember, I've got this A and A bar. So I draw them here. So there's a 0 electron state, there's the A state, A bar state, and then there's the AA bar state. And the energies, as you know, are 0, epsilon, 2 epsilon plus U. And basically, you see, this step occurs when the biasing is such that electrons have enough energy to get into this, but not into that, essentially. So in other words, it's like the chemical potential here is higher than epsilon, but not higher than epsilon plus U. So if you're thinking in a one electron picture, this is roughly, so you think that this one is at such a level that electrons can get into epsilon, but not into that. And when you put enough bias to cross that, then of course you just get the usual current. There's no mysteries there. The important thing is what happens when it's right here. Now, in this picture, the way you think is, electrons are available in contact one with energy epsilon, and so you can go up and down at the rate of gamma 1. And rather, you can go up at the rate of gamma 1 into this level or into that level. And you can come down at a rate gamma 2 from here, or you can come down at a rate gamma 2 from here. But what you cannot do is go from this to the next level. Why is that? So this is where what we are saying is the rate is 0. You cannot go up. Why? Because in order to get from here to here, you need an energy of epsilon plus U, not epsilon. And electrons are not available with energy epsilon plus U. This is the chemical potential. Electrons are available with energies below this, and epsilon happens to be less than this, but there's nothing there. Now, this is also one of the important things that you that takes a little time to get oriented to, and that is that in the one electron picture, the levels that we draw are kind of like the differences in the multi-electron picture. So it's like this difference is epsilon, and that's what is one of those there. This difference is epsilon plus U, that's the other one there. You see? So it's these differences that appear here. Okay? Now, the point then is that under this bias condition, it's like you cannot have two electrons inside. There's just not, because there's just not enough energy for that. You can't get in there. So the picture, so the entire picture more or less just stops here. That's it. It doesn't go up. And of course, if U were zero, that wouldn't be the case. Because then if you could get here, you could also get from here to there. Then in a way, it would just be as if it's independent electrons. Doesn't matter if an electron's already present, you can put in the second one. But now what it says is, if there's no electrons, you can add one. But if there's one present, you can't add a second one. It just takes too much energy. So now what we have to figure out is the dynamics of this. That is, at steady state, what happens is, the rate at which you go up here, go down, those are equal. Going up, down, equal. And if you just look at the rate at which it goes up, that's what will give you the current. That is it. So, now, the way you do this then is, you could say that P of A over P0, suppose you could write P of A plus P of A bar, let me just write P of A over P of 0, is equal to gamma 1 over gamma 2. And I suppose the same is true of P of A bar over P 0. So what that means is, or you could have written P A plus P A bar over P 0. Is equal to 2 gamma 1 over gamma 2. Now, can you help me with what's P0? Right. Again, the way you can think is, if I put P0 equals 1, then PA plus PA bar would have come out as 2 gamma 1 over gamma 2. But then whole thing must add up to 1. So I just divide this by 1 plus 2 gamma 1 over gamma 2 and divide this by 1 plus 2 gamma 1 over gamma 2. That's it. So now I can make sure they add up to 1. Works fine. And if I want the current then, what should I do? It's Q over H bar times the rate at which it's going up here is gamma 1 times P0, and this one is another gamma 1 times P0. So I could just write 2 gamma 1 times P0, which is equal to Q over H bar 2 gamma 1, and P0 is that. So it comes out very simply. So the point I'm trying to make is that this result here, that this step is like 2/3 of the whole thing. It's something that's hard to get out of the mean field picture. You know, hard to understand why with one level you're not quite getting half the current but 2/3. But when you do it this way, you know, it almost falls out very easily. You know, you can think through the algebra. There's not much here, really. And one way to physically justify, think about it, and once you know the answer, actually, there's, you know, all kinds of pictures that you can figure out. The way to think about it is something like this, that when you're coming in, it's like you can come in at gamma 1. So it's like you have two ways of coming in. Either you can go from 0 to A or 0 to A bar. So it's like 2 gamma 1 coming in. So from here, you've got two levels you can go to. So it's like 2 gamma 1. Whereas when coming out, once you're there, there's no way you can go anywhere else. There's only one way to come back. So you can say it is as if going in, you got 2 gamma 1, but coming back out, you only have gamma 2. And so the current is You know, if you had gamma 1 and gamma 2, it would have been gamma 1, gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2. Now it's like, instead of gamma 1, it's become 2 gamma 1 because there's two ways to come in. So you just put a 2 there. So that would be the simple way to justify what you got. But you see, it's not very convincing unless you really know the answer and you kind of believe in it anyway. In that case, this would be one way to say it. And then you can say, well, you know, if you had 8 levels there, you immediately see what to do. It's like 8 gamma 1 gamma 2 over 8 gamma 1 plus gamma 2. Okay? And basically, it would be again the same story. It's like coming in, there would be many ways of doing it, and then going out is just one way. Because once one has come in, there's nothing more you can do about it. That's it. Okay. Now, more interesting things you can think of. It's like this. Let's think of something. Okay, take this out. Okay, suppose we have a device which actually has, and for this discussion, for the moment, let's not even think about spin. So let's say I just got two levels. You know, I call them A and B, like this, one here, one there. And this level has the property that it's nicely connected to both sides. So it's a gamma 1, and you got gamma 2 going out. Gamma 1 coming in, gamma 2 going out. And this level has the property that it's only connected to the left, but it has no way of getting out. That's it. Just can't get out. And what I claim is that that could show some interesting current voltage characteristics. Because the way I draw this picture then is, so I've got this first level at epsilon 1, that's the A level, and then I've got the B level, which is at epsilon 2. So when I put on a bias, so at first, when I cross this level, some current starts flowing. The other one is way up there, doesn't even know anything's happening. And you get a current. So we'll call, that would be like gamma 1, gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2. Now the question is, what happens when I raise this up here so that I have enough, electrons have enough energy to get into the B level? So what that means is, you know, previously you had a gamma 1 taking you up to this level and gamma 2 taking you down, and that's why you are getting a current of gamma 1, gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2. No problem. Now, once the B comes into the picture, you have another process. That's this gamma 1 prime that takes you in, but then no way to get out. So gamma 2 prime is 0. Right? So in practice, you can engineer various physical situations where one level is well connected to the left and hardly connected to the right. Some kind of a trap that you can fill up from the left but not get out into the right. This could be a trap of some kind. Now, what a question is, once, so at first when the bias is low, of course, this is not even in the picture because the bias is here. You can only get in here. Here, although there's a gamma 1 prime, there's no electrons available with the right energy. So the Fermi function is 0 anyway. So you don't get anything. So this is out of the picture in the beginning, and you have this current. But once this comes into the picture, question is, what will happen to the current? And if you're not thinking too much about it, you might say, well, you know, I got this process going on, and then this one comes in addition. And this one, of course, doesn't conduct much because, after all, it's gamma 1 prime. Although it can go in, it can't get out. And currents tend to be this times this divided by this plus this, and that will be 0, so it won't add anything. That's what you might think, that, okay, this is kind of like in parallel to that. But that's what is wrong. That statement isn't right. It's not quite in parallel. What I claim will happen is the following. You see, as long as this was not in the picture, you had half a chance of being here and half a chance of being here, and the ratio was gamma 1 to gamma 2. But once this is in the picture, the point is the system will just get locked in there. Why? Because So let's say you start here. Something takes you over there. End of story. You can't get out ever. So it doesn't matter where you start. Sooner or later, you'll just find yourself in there. If you solve this dynamical equation that tells, you know, you could write a dynamical set of equations telling you the probabilities of being in various states and the rates at which you go from one to the other. But at the end of the day, you'll just find yourself in there. And once you're in there, no current flows. So basically what you'd expect is, once you access that new level, it should just plain drop. Zero. Right? You should expect then. Now, one way to physically think about this, when I say physically, what I mean by that is in the one electron picture. Because, you know, this one seems more physical. This is the one that we kind of understand better. So in this picture, you could say what really happened is something like this. You see, I was conducting through this level nicely. And then once I got in here and managed to fill up this level, what happened is because of the presence of that electron, this level just got thrown out of the window, you know, because of charging. Because you remember, I'm assuming that there's so much charging energy that you can no way have more than one electron in there. You know, having two electrons in there costs too much energy, right? That's why this thing kind of stops here. We are saying this guy is way out of the picture. It takes too much energy to put anyone up there. So here what happens then is once this is filled up, it's as if this level just got out of the picture completely. And so you can't conduct anymore. All you have is this level which won't conduct, but it's filled, so it just stops anyone else from conducting. Yeah. Right. Right. Eventually, when you put enough voltage, you'll be able to conduct through all of them. So when you have put enough voltage so that you can put in two electrons in there, then it is almost as if the levels are independent. Because one of them is filled, so what? The other one can still conduct. Right. So with enough voltage, you would always open it up again. Right. So it's this intermediate situation. So this is an example, again, of something that would be hard probably to get out of the usual one electron picture. What I'm not quite sure is whether it would give you a decrease if you did the one electron picture. What I'm sure is it won't give you this sharp drop. What I'm not quite sure is whether it would give you a general decrease or not even that. That's the part I haven't thought through enough. Okay. Now, things like this people do see from time to time, you know, especially when traps are involved. You know, all kinds of devices with traps in there. And it's like if you raise the voltage enough, you manage to populate a trap, and because you have populated a trap, it doesn't conduct so well anymore. So all these things do happen. And I see a lot of this. Okay. Now, a more subtle example of this, that there's been a lot of work in the last two or three years, four years, is that involves actually singlet and triplet states, which is also kind of similar. It works something like this. The device they look at is one with two quantum dots. And the bias is such that the electron, that originally you have one electron in there. So one electron, what state is it in? Well, it will be in one of the eigenstates of this system. So if you remember, actually let me renumber these a little bit. That means, yeah, so you have a b bar. So you can have epsilon t. And the way I've done this, a and b are somewhat different, so that this one is actually lower than that. So the experiments are done on two quantum dots, where one quantum dot actually is way lower than the other one. And so the eigenstates then look like there's a bonding level, and then there's an antibonding level, which is out of the picture. And the bonding level, there's a B and a B bar. And this bonding level is largely B with a little bit of A in it. So, just a little bit of A. So why is that? Well, because these two, the energies are, this energy is way lower than this, and so the lowest energy ordinarily would be B, but then because of this coupling T to this one, there's a little bit of A. If you actually found the eigenstate, you'd find that it is largely B and a little bit of A mixed into it. So that's the state the system electron wants to be in. So it could be either in the upspin or the downspin one, and the downspin would have looked much the same. It would be A bar plus B bar. But let's forget this. Let's say we are just in this one. So you've got an upspin electron in there. That's easy enough. Now, when you put a bias on this, electrons are coming in from the left. And there's two possibilities. One is that when the electron comes in, it takes you to a singlet state. Okay, what do I mean by that? That is, you have an upspin electron in here, and what came in here is, let's say, a downspin electron. And as you know, in the two-electron state, the lowest energy is the singlet state. And what does the singlet state look like? This, if you remember, it consists of AB bar plus BA bar, and then a little bit of AA bar and a little bit of BB bar. Okay. So that's what it would. That's what the singlet state looks like. So you were originally in something like this, and let us say you come in with a bar. So an electron A bar comes in, and so A bar times A. So what you end up then with is something that looks like A bar A and A bar B. And these, of course, don't look exactly like the singlet state, but there is a lot of overlap there. So what will happen is there will be a certain probability the system would actually go into the singlet state. Okay? And exactly what that probability is, that I'll try to explain next day a little more. We'll try to explain this whole picture in a more detail. But right now, I just wanted to get across the physical fact here, and that is that when you come in with A bar, it goes into the singlet state. And then current will flow by, you know, you came in with A bar, and then from the right-hand side, you can pull out a B or a B bar. You can pull that out. So once you're in the singlet state, you could pull out a B, let's say, and you'd be left with B bar plus A bar. Because if you pull out one of these, the Bs, you'd have something like this. And so the singlet state usually would conduct nicely. Now, the point I want to make is that every once in a while, an electron could come in with an upspin, and then the whole thing would get into a triplet state, and the triplet state won't conduct very well at all, because the triplet state cannot empty out into the right-hand contact. That's not obvious. That's what I want to explain. And so what happens is, overall, the picture you end up with is something like this, that the electron is initially in a one-electron state, in the bonding state, let's say, in, you know, this kind of a one-electron state. And then you have these two possibilities. Namely, or rather, when you put enough voltage, it can go into the singlet state, and it can conduct. But when you put a little more voltage, that's when the triplet state becomes accessible. And once you get into the triplet state, the point is you can go in there, but you do not come out quite so easily. So overall picture is a little bit like what I told you about traps. It's just that it's a lot more subtle and takes a lot more time to understand the details right. You see? But the overall picture is something like this. You have this double quantum dot system sitting in a one electron state. You put in a little bit of bias. It finds that it can go into the singlet state. The singlet state has the lowest energy, so that's what becomes accessible. And it's conducting nicely, nice current flowing. Put in a little more voltage, and now even the triplet state becomes accessible. But once it goes into the triplet state, it can't get out so well. Now, that's the part that needs more discussion. It's not immediately clear why the triplet doesn't get out quite so well. But because of this, then, you see a sudden drop in current that looks a lot like that. See? And this is the thing that was demonstrated, I think, about 4 or 5 years ago first. And then people have done lots of experiments, you know, with well-tuned quantum dots. They have very good control over these levels in quantum dots. You know, they can control these very precisely and move them around. And what they've done is lots of experiments where they see this very clearly, that as you turn up the voltage, it conducts to the singlet, and then it suddenly drops because the triplet comes in. See? And so, yeah, let me stop here today, and we'll finish this up next day.